This episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Sunday services on campus and online at 9 and 11 a.m. Learn more at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyler Clausen, and this is what's happening in your community. A Malala man and one child passenger were killed, with another child injured in a single vehicle crash on South Dryland Road in unincorporated Clackamas County on Sunday afternoon. Shortly after 5 p.m., Clackamas County Sheriff's Office deputies and emergency personnel with the Canby Fire District as well as Malala Police responded to the scene of the incident in the 29300 block of Dryland Road, south of Canby, Lone Elder, and Maxburg. Clackamas County Public Information Officer John Wilderbar said a 911 caller reported hearing a crash and seeing smoke, then seeing a pickup truck down an embankment with three people believed to be trapped inside. First responders located the vehicle, which had traveled down an embankment on the east side of the roadway. The truck reportedly suffered significant front-end damage, and authorities believe the vehicle struck a large tree near the road. Sadly, the 36-year-old adult driver, later identified by police as Malala resident Jonathan Mickey, and a child passenger suffered fatal injuries and were declared dead at the scene. A second child passenger was transported via ambulance to a local hospital. Police did not initially release the driver's name and said the cause of the crash was still being investigated. The Clackamas County Medical Examiner's Office also assisted at the scene. Canby on Wednesday became the first known city in the United States to pass a resolution officially acknowledging the service, pain, and sacrifice of the Vietnam veteran community, as well as apologizing and expressing regret for the negative treatment of those service members received when they returned home. Spearheading the project are Canby residents Ken and Melinda Buckles of the educational nonprofit Remembering America's Heroes, who approached the Canby City Council earlier this year to request the city's support of the resolution as well as a cross-country trip to honor the Vietnam veterans across the country this fall. The Buckles were in attendance Wednesday as Mayor Brian Hodson read the resolution, followed by a standing ovation from city leaders and attendees. It was an emotional moment as several councilors shared what the Buckles' work and the resolution meant to them. "I hope I don't cry when I say this, but thank you," Council Member Sean Varwig said. "My dad was in the Navy in the Vietnam War, and I remember growing up wanting to know the stories, but he had a hard time talking about it. He didn't want to talk about it, and it was because of how he was treated when he came home." Varwig, whose business PDX Delivery and Logistics is sponsoring the gas for the Honoring Vietnam Veterans Across America trip, said the Buckles' efforts were benefiting not only Vietnam vets themselves, but also their families. There was no way I could let you go on that trip without giving you some sort of sponsorship. So it's truly an honor to be able to help you guys, Farwig said. But mostly, I'm forever grateful to you guys for letting people like my dad tell their stories. Ken Buckles, a retired teacher and coach, founded Remembering America's Heroes more than 20 years ago to organize Living History Day events, bringing veterans to speak with high school students across the state. He has also authored 3 books chronicling veteran stories in his Remembrance series, and is in the midst of voicing the second audiobook version of his work. You two are so incredible, Counselor Sarah Spoon told the couple Wednesday. You do so much for so many in our community. I just want to thank you for your continued commitment to veterans. Telling their stories is powerful, and you've given all of the people who read your books the opportunity to connect with those heroes. I'm so grateful for that. Ken Buckles said he was grateful for the courage, compassion, care, and patriotism of the community and the city leaders, and that, to his knowledge, Cambie is the first and only government entity to issue a formal apology to the Vietnam veteran population, though other cities have reached out and expressed interest. This action comes the week before I and my lovely wife Melinda are planning to depart on our Honoring Vietnam Veterans Across America tour, a cross-country journey spanning 6 weeks and more than 30 stops, Buckles said. The message of our tour is identical to that of Cambie's resolution. We are bringing a message of hope, healing, and reconciliation to our Vietnam veterans and their families. The planned kickoff for the Honoring Vietnam Veterans Across America tour will be at 9 a.m. Friday, October 28th at the Vietnam Era Veterans Memorial in Cambie. For more information about the effort or to follow the Buckleses along the journey, visit the Honoring Vietnam Veterans Across America page on Facebook. The city of Cambie will celebrate the grand opening of a new Grant Street Arch and Downtown Quiet Zone at an event next week. The grand opening event will start at 6 p.m. Thursday, November 3rd at the corner of Northwest 1st and North Grant Street and will coincide with the first Thursday night market in downtown Cambie. The event will feature speeches by Cambie officials and city staff. Light refreshments will be served after an honorary ribbon cutting. The Quiet Zone, which is officially took effect in late August, allowed trains crossing the Union Pacific Railroad tracks at 3 downtown intersections, Elm, Grant, and Ivy, to no longer blow their horns except in an emergency situation or to comply with other federal regulations. Funded by the urban renewal dollars, the project also involved the installation of new safety mechanisms and other upgrades to the 3 downtown railroad crossings, including new signage and flashing lighting and horns to alert pedestrians of an approaching train. The project also replaced the railroad crossing arms, added a 12-inch concrete curb to separate travel lanes and prevent traffic from crossing over to avoid the railroad gates. Upgraded all sidewalk crossings to meet ODOT and Union Pacific clearance requirements, and repaved and restriped the roadway connections between Highway 99E and First Avenue. The project has been in the works for several decades and took 3 years to plan and realize. It also included the construction of the new Grant Street Arch, which was unrelated to the Quiet Zone safety measure improvements, but combining the two saved on project costs and meant Grant Street had to be closed for construction only once last year instead of twice. The two projects, which amounted to one of the most significant the city has undertaken in years, were aimed at economic development, with city leaders hoping the Scott Edwards Architectural Design Arch would help entice motorists passing by on Highway 99E to visit and patronize downtown merchants and restaurants, while the Quiet Zone is meant to improve livability and economic viability downtown. The Grant Street Arch is uplit on both of the pillars anchoring the archway and will feature three historic plaques. The lighting displays can be changed throughout the year to highlight events and holidays, and even celebrate the achievements of Canby High School students and athletes. Governor Kate Brown has wrapped her visit to South Korea and Japan. The 12-day trip, she said, was to strengthen trade relations with the countries as well as to pursue economic development opportunities for Oregon companies. It was the governor's first trip to Asia since 2019 and was joined by Oregon leaders who represent agriculture, engineering, and other industries. Brown said the goal was to expand Oregon's semiconductor industry, agricultural imports, and other trade opportunities, as well as promote tourism. We certainly have had a series of productive meetings around the semiconductor industry in Japan, Brown said in a statement from Japan this week. Hitachi, for example, has facilities in Hillsboro, which are a part of Intel's semiconductor research and development ecosystem. She added that she believes that there are huge opportunities to partner around semiconductors with Japan, following the signing of the Federal Chips and Science Act earlier this year. Currently, South Korea is Oregon's fourth largest export market, while Japan ranks sixth. Together, they contribute to a nearly $30 billion global export market. The governor says she is confident her visit will bring economic growth and encourage strong relationships beyond her administration. Clackamas County Police arrested 25 people and attempted to arrest an additional 102 with outstanding family violence warrants last week as part of a Domestic Violence Awareness Month sweep. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said that every year the law enforcement agencies in Oregon collaborate to track down people accused of domestic abuse for the annual sweep. This year, 45 Clackamas County officers joined the 215 agencies in 15 states for the effort. This collaborative effort demonstrates to offenders that no matter where they flee, we will work to hold them accountable for their crimes, the sheriff's office said. It also helps to raise awareness for the problem of family violence in our communities. Anyone who is experiencing domestic violence can find help by calling a Safe Place Family Justice Center at 503-655-8600 or Clackamas Women's Services 24-hour crisis and support line at 503-654-2288. If you or someone you love is in immediate danger, call 911.
Wow, Frankie, that sounds great. I didn't know that you could play the kalimba.
Yeah, well, I've been practicing a lot. I'm really hoping to make it onto the 434th season of America's Got Talent.
Well, good luck with that, man.
Yeah, hey, I was actually just about to check my email and see if they responded.
Uh-huh. Yeah?
Oh.
What?
Well, they hated it.
No way.
Yeah, they said it was really bad, but like not in like a funny way, so they're not interested.
Dang. What song did you end up playing?
The same one I was playing earlier. Listen, here's what I uploaded.
What? I mean, I kind of like it. It's like a dark remix meets Star Wars sort of sound.
No. That's not what I recorded at all. How did this happen?
Dude, it's like I always tell you. That choppiness you're hearing is because your internet provider speeds are on the slower side. Everyone focuses on downloading, but upload speeds are just as critical for students, remote workers, would-be reality talent show stars, really anybody who uses the internet to share their passion with the world.
Is there like a show called America's Got Bad Internet that I could audition for?
Maybe. Or you could just switch to DirectLink. They've got the most reliable upload speeds to pass any audition test. For uploads at the speed of learning, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give them a call at 503-266-8111.
Okay, so at the Camping Conversation today, we are over at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds talking with Director Brian Crow. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And Trina Smith. Hi, Trina.
Hi.
First time, I think, on
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, first time.
Congratulations.
Well, so, thank you. Thank you.
Talking about what's coming up here for the holiday season, the Winter Fair. So what do we got going on?
We have lots of lights.
This is third year, right? Or fourth year?
It would have been the fourth year,
okay.
But third year that we've been able to do it.
Yeah.
In the past, it's just been the lights.
Then the lights.
Outside.
We had a walkthrough for a year or two, or
yep.
2 years, I think.
Yeah. I think the last year, I think it was a walkthrough too.
Yeah.
I don't think they did a drive-through for that, but
yeah.
I think 1 year they did do a drive-through though.
Yeah,
first
2020.
Year.
So that would have been
2020. Yeah, 2020
and then
they did
last
the drive through.
We did the walkthrough.
Yep.
So this must be our
really
third
fun.
Year then.
Yeah.
So then it is our third year. So
yeah.
2020. Yeah. Okay. So it is our third year.
Yeah.
So we're gonna still have the walkthrough with the lights where they can go back and Santa will be back there with his cottage.
Yeah.
And then everybody will start out by coming through the building to a holiday market.
Okay. Cool.
Where we will have a ton
in the
of
main
vendors.
Pavilion?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll have a variety of vendors for doing shopping, and there's food.
That's awesome. How many vendors do you think you have?
So far, I have 20, so my goal is to get up to 25
awesome.
To 30.
Yeah. A lot of, like, local vendors?
A lot of them are local. That I like to try to stay local just to... You know,
that seems to be a really big thing in Canby. We get the question all the time, and people post it on social media. They want to know where the bazaars are happening. They really like to do their shopping locally and
they do.
Support local vendors. Yeah.
Yeah, I see that everywhere.
It's gone
in
away
all
in a lot
biz-
of places.
Yeah. Canby is like one of the ones that really stick with that.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah. We don't want to go far.
Yeah.
Don't want to go far to get things. So.
Okay, that's cool. So,
we support our own here.
Yeah. And I think that last year was not, I think they were kind of coinciding, but they weren't like sort of merged, like it sounds like you're doing. Like it's really part of the event now, part of the Winter Fair.
Yeah, so we do still have our Country Christmas Bazaar.
Okay.
That's in the beginning of November.
Gotcha, okay.
So it's the bazaar where people bring in all their crafts and all their things that they want to sell.
Yeah.
Whereas the holiday market will be more, not so many craft type items, but more things that... You know, you can continue to purchase and, you know, smaller businesses or,
That's awesome.
I have a couple local businesses coming in to just advertise for themselves. And so.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What are the dates for the Winter Fair?
It is, starts December 2nd.
Okay.
And it goes through the 23rd, but it is Friday and Saturdays only, except for that last week.
Okay.
We're going to be doing Thursday and Friday because Christmas Eve is on Saturday. So.
Oh, okay.
So we don't want to go on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that's
so,
nice. Probably
yeah,
like
yeah, and then it's from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, awesome. So the 2nd is a Friday, I think.
Yep.
So that's, and that'll be probably the city's light of the night. So kind of Canby's big kickoff, and we'll be kicking things off here too.
Yeah. So hopefully.
So if you're looking for Santa that night, though, Santa will be downtown. He won't be here.
Okay.
So that's the only night that he couldn't be in two places.
Right.
So he'll be here starting
the
3rd.
I mean, he can do a lot of things, but he still can't be in two places.
Right.
Come on, give him a break.
Yeah.
One of the other cool things we've added to the pavilion this year, so you enter in through the pavilion, got all of our vendors, but we're also working with a ton of schools, middle schools and high schools, to bring their choirs and bands to come play every night.
That
so
really
they'll
cool.
be featured inside here in the pavilion. So you can come in and, you know, grab a hot cocoa from Gimme Some Sugar and, you know, sit down and watch your kiddos sing. And then when they're done, they can go wander out through the lights.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, very festive. I think Brian could be a pretty good Santa. What do you think, Trina?
We tried to talk him into it.
Yeah, did you?
We did. We tried to talk him into it.
Yeah.
I was close 30 pounds ago, but, you know.
That's a problem with him being the boss. He can just say no. And
I know. He says no a lot.
What?
Okay, so let's talk more about the fair. It's so cool, like, just how the fairgrounds gets transformed with all the lights and everything. How do you guys kind of set out to design that? What's the experience once you get out into the lights that you're trying to create?
So the staff met a few weeks ago to kind of redesign the process. And then we work with the Christmas lights guys out of Salem. They do all of our erection for us. So they've been working for weeks now. We've got a lot of stuff already set up.
Oh, yeah.
And,
cool.
It'll be just under a half a mile of a wandering from exiting the pavilion through the fir grove, and we've got lights the whole way. We've got a great light tunnel that's always popular, and then a big light wall on the east side of the Ely Arena, again, plus all sorts of little features. And we've added a few moving lights this year, so that'll be kind of fun, create a little more ambiance.
Yeah.
But the experience will start as soon as you step outside the door on the pavilion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting.
Yeah. It is really fun to, just be able to walk through and kind of experience that, you know, close up and not have it as a drive-thru. It's logistically a lot that goes into the setup and just keeping everything going. Is that right?
It is. And it's not cheap either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Costs aren't going down very much, are they?
And labor. Yeah. Labor is really the big expense on it. And, you know, we're looking at a 30% increase on labor this year, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But we do it for the community.
Yeah.
We're not in this to make a ton of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to be profitable on it.
Right. Right. The technology has probably, you know, you can do a lot of cool things with lights and things now that you didn't used to be able to do, you know, 10, 15 years ago with LEDs and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll have our dancing Christmas tree that changes colors and, you know, flashy lights, and it's pretty nifty. It's a 16 or a 20 foot. I think it's a 20 foot Christmas tree.
Yeah, I think so.
That'd be kind of the centerpiece of the fir grove area.
Yeah.
And then of course Santa will be back there, like Trina said, back in his little area with Mrs. Claus, and they're excited to come, and they're making a special trip down. So
right. Yeah. Yeah, for a few weeks, and it's a busy time for them, so that's really nice of them.
Yeah,
I think Santa's done a really good job of delegating the toy manufacturing part of it, and so he's able to break away.
With Bezos and some,
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
He's gone corporate.
Well, and then Elon Musk is helping him a bit with some of the delivery side of things.
Or getting in the way, depending on. He's pretty involved with Twitter now, I hear. But one thing that you guys have done in the past has been really cool with the lights is sort of doing some, you know, like some cowboy things, some things that are sort of on theme for the fairgrounds. Are we going to see some of those elements?
We'll see our cowboy corral come back, the decorated horse trailer. So a lot of our scenes out in the fir grove will be rodeo or fair related.
Awesome. The North Pole, I remember last year with Santa and Mrs. Claus, was really cool, like really hand designed and a lot of stuff like that. Is it gonna be like that again this year?
We've got a local designer.
Bringing her back.
Yep.
Stephanie.
Yep. Stephanie's going to come back and help us with Santa's village area, and then a couple more of the features on the main lawn. She'll be working on those as well. So we're excited to see what that turns into.
Yeah. Very cool. It is neat to
see, you know, obviously we've got, you know, obviously the fair in the summer, you know, that's always been something that happens at the fairgrounds. You got the scare fair, or the haunt, Canby Haunt, for the Halloween season. And it's, you know, the fairgrounds is very much in a lot of ways sort of the heart of Canby, you know, even literally with its location. And just to, like you say, for the community to kind of keep these things going is really neat, because it just kind of uses that space, uses that presence throughout the year and in different seasons that are important to the community.
Definitely. That's our goal, is to continue to develop events like the Winter Fair and the Canby Haunt and our County Fair, so that we're really maximizing the use of the facility. This is a great facility with tons of potential. And I know that Trina and I are now working on the Wine, Food, and Brew, bringing that back this spring.
Yeah.
But bringing it back bigger and better.
Nice.
So we're excited about that. Trina's been doing a great job on that.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be really fun to see that come back. Awesome. So how can folks find out more about ticket information? Or I don't know if it's active yet.
Tickets will go on sale November 15th.
Okay.
And they can come just to the ClackamasCountyFair.com website.
Okay.
We'll have ccwinterfair.com will be active as well. So either way, we'll get them to the same place.
Okay.
And you can buy tickets there. So we're ticketing this year is by day.
Okay.
So you just select what day you want to come. It's not a timed event, so you know, you make it down whatever makes sense for you. And you can always buy tickets at the door. It's $5 for kids 3 to 12, and $10 for 12 and over.
Okay, awesome. Will there be some food vendors set up outside like there were last year as well, or?
We're just gonna have the one actual food vendor, and okay. They're gonna be set up inside the kitchen annex in the main pavilion.
Yeah.
Everybody was super excited to be indoors this year.
It was pretty wet last year, the night that we went.
Yeah, it was wet. It was windy. We had some disasters. And so I have like one or two vendors that will probably be out there, maybe a coffee vendor. And then we've got a light up toy vendor that he wants to be back out there. So that works for them. But everybody else will be inside, and just going to have, you know, the one food vendor that's got a variety of different things, the sweets and savory and drinks and like just about everything. She's got it on there.
Yeah.
And then there'll be some vendors too selling some sweet treats and things like that. So.
Yeah. It is really, really nice to have that, to be able to walk through with a hot cocoa or a grown-up hot cocoa or whatever's on offer. How many lights do you think go into the Winter Fair?
There's over 200,000 lights.
That's a lot of lights.
And you mentioned the rain. This year we will have
no rain.
we put in our order early. But
that's awesome.
By some weird chance, if it rains in December, we have a borrow an umbrella program going. So we've got a whole slew of umbrellas that you can pick one or two up for your family as you leave the pavilion, and then just return it as you come back. And
that's a nice program. Why didn't we not think of that?
They don't help much.
He's paying for himself.
They don't help much if it's windy and rainy.
Yeah,
but if it's just, you know, your December can be drizzle.
I think the night that we went last year was legitimately the worst storm of last year, and it was just soaked, and it, you know, the whole seating area and everything and the food area was tented, but when it's really heavy rain, there's a way of it just sort of pools and then just dumps in certain areas, and we were like, so I mean, we just looked like we'd come out of a jumping in a swimming pool, we're so wet. But
And this year you can go out there, you can get soaking wet, come in, dry off, be warm. You know, come back through, get some, you know, hot drinks, and you know,
listen to some music.
Listen to music.
Sit down on a table.
I love that. Kids. So that's going to be mainly a choral thing, you said, or will they?
We'll have, you know, like local bands. Barbershop Quartet will be here one night. We're finalizing the schedules now, but it'll be school bands and school choirs, and then, you know, some nights we'll have just a, you know, like a three-piece combo that'll come play Christmas music. But we're really focusing on bringing the kids and, you know, the arts programs within the schools to support that.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for your time. It's really been great to talk to you. We need to let Brian get back to work. He's done about 500 lights so far, so he just has 199,500
to go. So.
Yeah, that's it. Just a few. And I do them all by hand. Each one I place meticulously.
Where's Brian always on the lights?
I'm Roz Mason, running to be your next District 26 Senator. I work for a living too. Like you, I've seen prices rise steeply in local stores. It started with COVID, when we could understand supply chain backups. That's still 30% of inflation. But can you guess the biggest reason prices are climbing? 55 to 60% of inflation is corporate price gouging. Wall Street companies are making record profits. Take gas. One of the big oil companies made $13.2 billion more this year than last. Want the facts and figures? Check out masonfororegon.com/inflation. This is not fair. In Salem, I will fight for policies that help working people and our rural communities to prosper. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
Over the years, the Christmas holiday season has held a special place in the hearts of many a Canby resident. Celebrations of the annual winter holiday date back to Canby's earliest days. In 1873, just 3 years after the town was given the name Canby, the Oregonian recorded a rendition of the Willamette's Ball, an annual soiree that was held here. Many responded to invitations extended, and the comfortable room was, as usual, crowded. The newspaper reported of the event. It is needless to say that affairs were conducted in excellent style, and the music was very fine. All spent a pleasant evening, that may be safely said. Of course, Christmas holds a special significance to the Christian faith community, which has long represented a sizable portion of Canby's citizenry. In the early days, many German-speaking Christians called Canby home, and the Canby Evangelical Church of North America had many such worshipers. For years, the group met and worshipped in the homes of fellow members, but in 1894, they built their first church, which still stands today at 339 South Township Road. The church was dedicated on Christmas Eve of that year under the direction of its first pastor, Reverend Hermann Schuchnecht. German was the spoken language in the church until 1912. In 1907, tragedy struck a prominent local family during the holiday season as well-known Canby citizen James Fagley went missing under mysterious circumstances. On December 17th, Fagley, an agent of the Russellville Nursery Company, drove from Canby to Butteville, St. Paul, and finally Woodburn on business, staying overnight in Shampooey. The following day, he was expected to return home to Canby, but he did not. In fact, he was never heard from again. His disappearance 10 days ago has aroused much speculation as to his probable fate, the Oregonian reported in December 28, 1907. It is feared that he has met with foul play. Mr. Fagley drove a black horse with white stripe on the forehead and had a top buggy, newspapers noted. The only theory that seems plausible is the one that Mr. Fagley was held up a few miles from Shampooey before it was quite light, murdered, and his body placed in the bushes along the road and his conveyance driven away. Fagley's son, Grant, was a prominent businessman and later politician in Portland who managed Columbia Woolen Mills. After receiving the distressing news of his father's disappearance on Christmas Day, he spent 3 days scouring the boggy underbrush on both sides of the 12-mile road between Canby and Shampooey, to no avail. Mr. Fagley was 62 years of age and resided with his daughter, Mrs. John Ridman, at Canby, the Oregonian said. He was in his usual cheerful spirits, and the idea that he is a suicide is not entertained by his family, The authorities throughout the valley have been requested to look out for supposed murderers with a stolen horse and buggy. Throughout the 20th century, the Christmas tree industry began to take root in Oregon, and Canby Farms were a part of the early boom. In 1918, the city's farms harvested an estimated 40,000 firs and distributed them all around the world. In 1924, a snowstorm dumped several inches of white powder on Canby just in time for Christmas, and though the youngsters enjoyed the chance to build a snowman and indulge in their other favorite activities, the storm caused the city no small amount of trouble. With 3 or 4 inches of snow and slush covering the ground here, and no lights or water, the Canby was in a plight as a result of the storm, which started at 7:30 this morning, the Oregonian said. Snow fell most of the day. Electric lights and telephone wires were damaged. The water supply ran out early tonight. Several accidents were reported on the highway during the day. 3 years later, an airmail plane piloted by N.B. Evans was wrecked near the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby shortly before Christmas. And don't worry, there's no evidence to suggest the plane struck an airborne sleigh pulled by eight tiny reindeer. Instead, the pilot reported that his engine had gone dead as he passed over Canby at an altitude of about 1,200 feet. Evans initially attempted to land on the fairgrounds' fine track, but couldn't make an approach due to electrical wires. After landing in a nearby field, the pilot, who was uninjured, began promptly disassembling the aircraft so it could be transported back to Portland for service. Only the landing gear and left wing were damaged in the unplanned landing. Scandal rattled through Canby in 1929 as a series of disgraceful episodes were reported on the city streets on December 25th. It is alleged that one man of Canby was found in a drunken sleep early Christmas morning and was taken home by a friend in a car, the Canby Herald reported the following day. Other young men, or boys, are said to have been drunk on the street Tuesday evening, but no arrests were made. Gambling was also allegedly witnessed on the Christian holiday, a vice that had been the scourge of many upstanding citizens that winter, according to the Herald. Much indignation has been aroused as a result of the alleged outrages uncovered Christmas Eve, the newspaper reported. And Night Officer Balsby, who is looked to for preservation of peace and dignity, was the subject of more or less censure. According to the paper, several prominent citizens had gathered at the post office on the day after Christmas to demand something be done. Unless adequate means of protection against such infringement upon the peace and dignity of the community is given, it was pointed out, there will be justification in enlisting the aid of state authorities to clean up the town, the Herald said. From what can be learned by current reports, there seems to be no doubt but that some of these requests are justified. The week of Christmas in 1988, six migrant families from Mexico facing eviction from a Canby church found themselves in new warm surroundings, on the receiving end of food, toys, and clothing donated by community residents. The families, consisting of 43 people, had moved into the Iglesia del Dios Vivo on Juniper Street earlier that month after their work terms had completed and they had nowhere else to go. But the presence of that many people in the aging building represented a safety concern, and the city had informed them that they would have to find new lodgings. Enter the Canby Grove Christian Conference Center, which put up all 43 souls in comfortable cabins on their property. Other generous Canbyites flooded the center with donations after hearing about the migrants' plight. When the bus showed up to transport the workers and their meager belongings to their new temporary living quarters, the families began to sing religious songs, the Oregonian reported. Many parents held hands with their sleepy children and carried their babies in their arms. Finally, one last tale from Canby's Christmas history. In 2001, library patron Felicia Sheeran checked out a video that contained an animated version of the poem "Twas the Night Before Christmas," along with several other holiday cartoons from the 1950s. She also checked out a book containing the same classic Yuletide poem. Both media contained depictions of Santa smoking a pipe and drinking a cup of holiday cheer. Sharon returned the book and movie with notes saying the materials were inappropriate for her 6-year-old daughter and 3-year-old son and demanding that they be removed from the library. On December 17th, just in time for Christmas, the library board issued its ruling. The materials would not be removed from the children's section. Policy held that censorship was a purely individual matter, and that the library does not act in the place of parents with regard to materials that children select. Library Director Beth Saul sent a letter to Sheeran, notifying her of the board's decision, thanking her for her interest and involvement. And that'll do it for this small bit of history for Canby. We hope you enjoy going into the holiday season as we do. Thanks for listening.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Franke. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.